I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you from Knoxville, Tennessee. A very somber, cold, morose Knoxville, Tennessee, where, look, I don't speak for all Tennessee fans. Matt Green, who's here, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, but it was rough. We had a Athens, Georgia takeover. There were Georgia fans all throughout Neyland Stadium, all throughout Knoxville over the weekend. We were overwhelmed in a stadium full of over 100,000 possibilities, but unfortunately,
probably 50,000 Georgia fans, I think.
Yeah, that's true. People are saying that there are 50,000 Georgia fans in attendance for this game that I was at. Is that the case? Who knows? Depends on who you read on Twitter.com. But I'm glad they've all gone home because I was worried. It was uncomfortable to be taken over in that way from a fan perspective. Because if there's one thing I know about the Tennessee Volunteers and our fan base, it's that we're not committed. And that when Georgia comes to town on homecoming weekend, where Candace Parker, Todd Helton, and Peyton Manning get honored at halftime, there's one thing I'm certain about, where Walter Nolan, the number one prospect in college football or in high school football, is on the field getting another inside look at big time SEC football. When Taven Jackson's there
now, he's an A&M commit now.
Well, he is, but like he goes to Powell, and it's not like he's signed yet. And Rodney Gardner, as we both know, is a recruiting machine, so it's not locked in. And Taven actually commented under it of like when he committed on, I think it was on Instagram or something, where he's like, "Oh, what the heck?" Something like that. So I think Taven and him are talking.
We'll see.
I would not rule that one out yet. But either way, I'm safe. I know you were worried last night how it would go with getting out of there with so many Georgia fans. And like you said, when you've left Knoxville after a victory, Matt, when you ushered in that unfortunate phrase, it's like
calling the dogs, as they call it. It was one of my favorite moments as a Georgia fan back in 2011, just like a crowd of Georgia fans just leaving Neyland Stadium, calling the dogs. It was good times. But yeah, I think the Georgia definitely travels well. Obviously, I think the whatever the numbers are, you can debate how many Georgia fans really were. Maybe it was 90-10, maybe it was more. I don't know. This is why Tennessee shouldn't do a blackout, because you can't really tell. Should have checkered that thing. Mm-hmm. You know? Checkered Neyland is, honestly, they should do that every week. But Georgia fans always show up, but this was a good one. Tennessee gave Georgia a game, that's for sure.
I wouldn't say we gave you a game. I think we gave you...
For a quarter and a half.
I was going to say, we gave you a quarter and a half. Which, in the grand scheme of things, when you think about where... I don't know how you feel about Alabama right now, but us giving Bama three quarters and you guys a quarter and a half seems about right, because I think Georgia's a much better team than Alabama this year, so that sounds about right based on the talent differential and where both programs are. But we were able to get a lot more off on Alabama than Georgia. And I think obviously the defensive discrepancies between the two programs right now are huge. And just seeing that Georgia defense up close and personal was very frustrating. Very, very frustrating, especially like the deep misses where I just turned to the Sports Renaissance woman. I'm like, you get two or three of those and that's it. Like, Georgia's not going to give us enough time. Cause I think we had what, six sacks total in this one. So the time wasn't going to be there. And that was a worry of just like the time to develop. I mean, Cedric Tillman still had 200 yards receiving in this one, but Javonte Payton not being a factor and not being active was huge blow, because like there's just no depth. Like, Georgia can move around. Graham Coffey, friend of the pod, of Dog Sports, we were tweeting back and forth about this last night, but he made this point. I don't know if you noticed this in real time, Matt, but like, Georgia had to make a bunch of adjustments on defense. Who was it, your starting free safety got benched, and they moved people around.
The star, yeah. Latavius Brinney. Mm-hmm. Once they brought Dan Jackson in for him, that really that stopped some of the big plays in the passing game, I thought, for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I think that was, I mean, hey, we forced you to make adjustments, but then like, as some Georgia fans mentioned, and I think this is true, is like, Kirby is elite in these adjustments and just being like, okay, they threw this haymaker and then we didn't have the players to adjust back. Like,
but another thing you saw was, so Adam Anderson, like, with Georgia being down him, like, that's a huge blow for Georgia defense. Like, they are super deep, but he's just so athletic and so versatile and probably Georgia's best pass rusher on top of that. And I think you saw Channing Tindall and Quay, like, Georgia's third inside linebacker has been the leading tackler on this team so far this year, partly based on the substitutions, partly based on how much the second string is playing. But you saw some Quay Walker, you saw some Channing Tindall playing that Adam Anderson role of, you know, trying to rush the passer. So that's the one thing you kind of worry about, is how Georgia can replace him. But, you know, they just have so many guys and they're just so versatile. Like, Channing Tindall was just all over the field yesterday. Three sacks. Like, that man is just, he looks like a missile every time on the way to hitting the ball carrier. Like, this Georgia defense is just absurd. Like, Tennessee, these first couple, you know, those first few drives, they were really moving the ball. And I think that, yeah, that first miss on that deep ball, I think that kind of changed the complexion of the game, really.
And we had another one. I think it was to Warren. It was either Warren or Fant, deep downfield, that we missed off the fingertips again. But yeah, I mean, that was, you just can't miss those against Georgia. Like, that's why Georgia is so great. Like, you can't miss those rare opportunities when we beat you over the top and stuff like that. And kudos to Heupel for doing that, being aggressive, going for it on fourth down in their territory, even though they're like, the rollout QB play was not great. Didn't love that play call, but I liked the idea of going for it. So,
See, and I know you're all about the tempo,
right?
But do you start to worry at after a while if you are so good in the first quarter, why can you not continue this the rest of the game? Like, why? Like, our team's just making adjustments. Like, you would think the tempo, if your team is good with the tempo, then you should be wearing out the opposing defense. Not, there shouldn't be simple adjustments that they can just, oh, now they can stop it. Like, are you wearing your own team out by trying to go so fast? Like, I wonder after a while, like, if the tempo is more of a novelty more than an actual, like, winning strategy.
I don't know. I think it was just more of Georgia took away a lot of the stuff that we wanted to in tempo. And I think that's just because Georgia is the best team in college football this year. Like, a lot of that, they have an all-time great defense. I think that was more of an anomaly than what you're going to see week to week. I think the tempo will bury most teams, especially in the SEC East, will bury them week in, week out. I just think Georgia's a different kind of team altogether. So I don't know. Can they do it against the best of the best as they continue to improve and get more games under Heupel and get in his own guys? I don't know. We'll have to see. But we'll get more into the UT-UGA game in due time. In due time. I'm glad our friendship in the podcast survived this one, Matt Green.
Yeah, we're good.
I feel like you were a little... what did you think about it? Did you think I was a little too homerish over the weekend? At least, do I get credit for calling that we would be winning after the first quarter? Do I get credit for that one? I banged that drum all week.
You get credit for that, but you also, I believe you said you'd be shocked if they weren't up 17-7 at the end of the first quarter.
What was it, 10-3? 10-7?
Yeah, 10-7.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
So it's you would be shocked if Tennessee isn't beating the number one team in the country by 10 at the end of the first quarter.
It was close. And that field goal where we were driving on that second possession too. So, I mean, it was right there for 14-7 at the end of the first.
It was close. But yeah, we'll finish getting into the whole Georgia Tennessee. We can keep it moving.
Can we get I want to raise a banner though for first quarter national title, like a first quarter national title team. Like, where is anyone better than Josh Heupel in the first quarter?
So at least you got that going.
Raise the banner. There was a great shout out to Tampa Bay Trey, friend of the pod, Trevor Sigma of PFF, who tweeted out the Tennessee banner of we scored 17 points on Georgia in 2021. So. That hey, raise the banner.
You got 15 minutes for the rest of your life. I think that's how those great speeches go in the locker room.
Mm-hmm. Matt Green, let's start with Jimmy Lake. So Jimmy Lake got fired after 13 games at Washington. He had just been suspended. Not a great year, but last year really wasn't that bad. He made it. An all-time bad OC hire in John Donovan, who was terrible at Penn State. He's been bad everywhere he's gone. He got fired first, but then Lake obviously got suspended for the contact with the player, and now he's just out. Both Washington and Washington State moving on from their coaches this season, both in relatively short fashion. Jimmy Lake getting fired stunned me because I thought he would still get at least 1 year, and Washington's not that kind of program that just is that cutthroat and moves that quickly, especially like I said, after 13 games. It was a stunner, but this is something that is interesting about Washington too, is that their basketball program's probably looking at a firing as well with Mike Hopkins, who's been really bad, and Washington's in a really bad place in their basketball program, and you just can't have that in the Power 5 and at a premier Power 5 program like UW, your two premier sports both being down like this. They're both hired by Jennifer Cohen, their current AD, and those are two big swings and misses. That she didn't hire Chris Peterson. I forgot who was the AD. I think it was Woodward, actually, who's now the AD at LSU. I want to say that's right. Who hired him at UW? I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that was the case. Either way,
when someone like this gets fired, like especially the shortened year in 2020, and now this year not even finished, like when you're firing someone after 14 games, like it's not about the win loss record, you know, it's about everything. And like you said, like they've looked inept at times, not just bad, they just looked just awful. And with also this player, him, you know, hitting the player or whatever, kind of the bad publicity that's come from that, I believe it's more than just the win losses, because I mean that's 14 games to the head coach. I'm sure there's more there.
Well, what do you make of it? Were you surprised that Lake got fired at this point? Do you think, where does this job rank for you? Because I think the AD also probably has to get looked at as getting replaced. That's the other thing. It's like, I don't know if I want Cohen making the next head coaching hire here and next basketball hire, because early on, not a great track record going Hopkins and Jimmy Lake is your first two premier program hires. You can't miss like that in today's college sports landscape, I don't think. So I'm curious how that unfolds as well. And yeah, I'm curious where this job ranks.
Yeah, in terms of where it is as a job, like, I don't know. It's like Washington's not a top 20 job, you know? It's like you could argue that no job in the Pac-12 is a top 20 job, to be honest. Like, just because of what that conference has become. Like, I think if you said Oregon and USC were top 20 jobs, like, I wouldn't really disagree with you. Like, those are solid jobs. But the conference as a whole, there's just so few eyeballs on it, right? So it's hard to really judge necessarily where the Pac-12 jobs rank. Because I feel like tradition-wise, like USC's in another like dimension than Florida, in my opinion. Like, and if Florida eventually, you know, moves on from Dan Mullen. But currently, like in today's landscape, I don't know that USC is a better job than Florida. You know what I mean? Like, so Oregon, yeah, Oregon's got all the Nike things going for them and everything. So like that makes it a big time job. But like Washington is, I'd say pretty clearly the third best job in the Pac-12, would you disagree? I'm trying to think of, like, if Stanford is better or if...
No, Stanford's definitely
maybe
not.
Maybe UCLA is better, but I would probably put Washington. They've had more, like, current success in the last, you know, two, three decades than UCLA has. But Washington's an interesting spot. Like, it's... that, and that's why I say it's got to be more than the win-loss record of Jimmy Lake. Like, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't anything to be excited about. So... Washington's definitely a solid Pac-12 job, but I wonder if one of these guys like who's the sexy name on the West Coast, because like, that's what it kind of seems like. It seems like West Coast guys kind of want to stay in the West Coast. So a guy like a Billy Napier or one of these Jamie Chadwells that's an up and comer in the Group of Five, they might not even be remotely interested in going out to the West Coast. So it all just... it seems like it's a different breed out there.
Yeah, and I think they got kind of lucky too, right? Going from Sarkisian, who restored that program because they were down for a while, and then Sark brought him back, and then Peterson just put it all together. And obviously Lake was a miss there, but he was just he was brought in with Peterson, and they were a great partnership for years. So I had just kind of penciled him; he'd be fine as long as he made the right OC hire, and I thought he would recruit well, but. I think it was just too much. I think they need to go the CEO route next. I think they kind of need to go back to the Chris Peterson type, someone who's already a proven head coach. Because I think this might be a more complicated job than we had thought. And this just it's tough. We'll have to see which way they go. But like you said, I mean, we've talked about this where it's like programs go back and forth on this stuff, where they go the Mack Brown and then they go hire Larry Fedora and then they go back to you know what I mean, where it's either the established old coach or you go the retread or the new fresh face, like Will Muschamp to Shane Beamer, Mark Richt to Kirby Smart. I just think that's kind of how this thing goes for a lot of programs, so I think they're probably going to look at a sitting head coach. But I'm curious. I mean, Jonathan Smith, I think, is call number one from Oregon State. We'll see if he's able to pry him away, because he was a quarterback at the Beavs, but he was the OC under Peterson. He's now had a lot of success at Oregon State, where it's a much more difficult job. He has a better opportunity to win there, because like you said, they're not going to get the Napiers of the world to move up to the Pacific Northwest. I don't think they're able to do that. So I'm curious to see where they go, because it's not like you can just go hire the elite Boise coach again, like the Brian Harsin or Chris Peterson, because it's like Andy Avalos, and he just got there. Maybe make a call about Craig Bohl at Wyoming. I don't know. I am very, very curious to see where Cohen and Washington go here, because I think Washington State has a much more clear route. And I wonder if it also hurts Washington State that UW just opened up, that UW just being the better program and the better area and all that kind of stuff, that will hurt who the Cougs can ultimately pry away from another Pacific side of things. So I'm very curious as a whole, but yeah, rough year for Husky fans, and we'll have to see what happens there. Jim Mora to UConn, sir. Falcons coaching legend Jim Mora. This came out of nowhere, right? Like, what do you make of Mora making the jump to UConn?
Well, you're a bigger Falcons fan, right? Like, Falcons fans, like, low-key hate Jim Mora, right?
No, he's fine.
No?
No. Petrino, Falcons
Petrino
fans hate.
For sure, yeah, the way he bounced. I didn't think he was remembered fondly as a Falcons head coach.
He was okay. Like, he was good for Vic for a little while. Like, he wasn't awful. No.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's a home run hire for UConn, you know, but... will this work out? Who knows? Like, I'm not sure how many coaches can make UConn work out. So we'll see. At least UConn having a coach that people have heard of is a step in the right direction for their program.
Well, here's the even better part. Did you know he was the offensive assistant at UConn this year?
No, I did not know that.
I didn't either. Like, when did he? I don't understand. Like, he was born in LA. He had the USCLA job. Like, what are you doing? Why'd you move to store? What is it? Stores, Connecticut? I don't really understand any of that. But I don't know. He wasn't a train wreck at UCLA, right? I mean, yeah. And I just pulled back up because I was like, I know I'm not misremembering that, because that was 17 years ago now that Mora was the coach of the Falcons. He went 11-5, 8-8, and 7-9. So he wasn't terrible. And he also wasn't terrible at UCLA. He almost won 10 games three straight years. He started 9-5, 10-3, 10-3, 8-5, and he never bottomed out. His last year there was 5-6, so I don't know.
Sounds like a Bo Pelini type career at UCLA. Maybe they didn't appreciate what they had.
Yeah, but we'll have to see. UCLA or UConn is just such a tough job, man. And I don't know. Like, we'll see, right? We'll see. I saw Liam Cohen strong in the mix for the UMass job, the OC at Kentucky. So we'll see what happens on that front. But yeah, bad programs in the Northeast taking a big swing. But hey, I just, you might as well just throw stuff at the board, right? When it comes to UConn, like, what, it can't get any worse. Go Huskies. Matt Green, if you had to guess the new top four for the college football playoff rankings this week before we record our next pod, who do you think the top four will be?
Oh, I think it's pretty easy, right? Because, I mean, nothing really changed with this week. So I think you got to go Georgia 1, Alabama 2, Oregon 3, and Ohio State 4.
Yeah. It's kind of coalesced pretty neatly, right? Like, now these four, if they just take care of their business, like, I think Georgia with the win, they're going no matter what because of who they have left in their calendar. Like, they could lose to Bama, but they're still, I think, locked in. I don't see a way.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think Georgia can fall out. They would have to lose in a way. They would have to lose 41-7 or something, and that's just not going to happen. So,
I think it's still possible. I think with just the scenario right now of all those teams right there at 2 through 5, like, I don't know. I guess it's tough to see undefeated Cincinnati getting in over one loss Georgia. But I feel like if Oregon loses, I feel like that almost guarantees Georgia's in, win or loss in the SEC championship. But I think just because I don't think there's enough real, like, contenders to keep Georgia out at that point. You know, you have the Big Ten champion. You can have Alabama at that point. You can have Cincinnati, and you can also get the loser of the SEC championship game. So I think that's what, it doesn't even make it that difficult on the committee at that point. But I think they'll have some decisions to make if Oregon and Ohio State and Cincinnati is still up there undefeated. But I think Cincinnati is the huge winner over the weekend. Like, with Oklahoma losing, I think that was the biggest thing. Like, they might be sitting at 5 with Georgia and Alabama are going to play each other, so that bodes well for moving up one spot. But you just had Oklahoma lurking in the rear view. Like, yeah, as soon as they play number 10 Baylor, number 12 Oklahoma State, or I think I'm switching those up, it's like it was going to be enough to put their resume. And then the Big 12 championship, all of that was going to move Oklahoma ahead of Cincinnati. So with Oklahoma going down, I think it's tough now for the Big 12 champion. Like, it's still possible, I guess, a one-loss Big 12 champion could jump Cincinnati, but I honestly don't see it. I think the Big 12 may have just been eliminated over the weekend.
Yeah, that's probably right. I think that's probably right. I do wonder, like, depending on how it goes, like, I could see Cincinnati fans, they have to cheer for Georgia hardcore in the SEC title game. I think you want to go ahead and put Alabama to bed there, right? Like, you want to make sure
that, without a doubt,
like, you're going hardcore for Bama to lose in the SEC title
it's
game.
It's like the bubble team rooting for chalk in the conference tournaments in college basketball. You know, you don't want that 10 seed from the SEC stealing an automatic bid. But yeah, I mean, you could talk Oklahoma State into there because, you know, that's one thing the Big 12 has going for them, is that even though that Big 12 championship is a rematch, it's always a quality opponent. So Oklahoma State, if they beat Oklahoma and then Baylor back to back, kind of, I think that could be enough. But yeah, I think Cincinnati is looking more and more like a possibility for the playoff every week we move on.
We shall see. We shall see. Matt Green, biggest takeaways of the weekend for you?
Biggest takeaways. Would you like me to start with my stat of the weekend?
Oh, that's right. The green line. Stat of the weekend. Let's go.
I'll hit you up with my stat of the weekend. As you're aware, not to toot my own horn or anything, my upset pick of the week, Baylor Bears, took down the Oklahoma Sooners. So Oklahoma this year has scored less than 24 points 3 times. Would you like to guess how many times in the first 4 years of Lincoln Riley the Sooners scored less than 24 points?
Zero.
That would be zero. 0. In the first 55 games of Lincoln Riley's tenure, they scored less than 24 points 0 times. They've done it 3 times in the last 8 games.
Man.
That's tough.
Man. The game, we'll get into the Baylor game this weekend, because it, like, you look at the box score and you look at the lines and you're just like, this was Lincoln Riley, just bonkers. It's just bonkers.
And that leads me to my biggest takeaway of the weekend. Is I told you this before the season started.
Mm.
Defense is not dead in 2021, sir. Defense is not dead. We had multiple games of the weekend. I think that's why I liked Baylor so much. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's messed around with so many people this year. Baylor, they were going into that hostile environment, and I think they have the best defense in the Big 12. And you saw them make plays. Caleb Williams got benched. Like, they were just looking for answers because they couldn't do anything against this Baylor defense. And you also had Ole Miss, that they won with defense. Like, the Ole Miss defense came to play versus Texas A&M. Like, I think Zach Calzada might be a one-hit wonder at this point. And then you also saw Georgia, you know, like they do every week, playing that Tennessee defense. So there's some big-time defenses that are shutting down some big-time offenses these days. Although I'm not sure I can call A&M a big-time offense. But Ole Miss came to play on Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get into the different wrinkles with that. Let's start with Ole Miss, Texas A&M, because we talked a little bit at the top of Georgia, Tennessee, so we'll get back to that. But Calzada really imploded in this one. Like, this was bad. And Kiffin just... What Kiffin did to Jimbo in this one was mean. It was like the analytics versus old school coaching too, in a lot of ways. But Kiffin really did. He outcoached Jimbo, and DJ Durkin. He did a great job. He shouldn't be a defensive coordinator or coach in college football anymore. But hey, he's doing some stuff here, and the defense, if they're able to shut down teams like Texas A&M. And that offense can cruise, because they were able to run the ball a lot, and they've struggled with that in recent weeks. But what did Ely have in this one? Did he get close to 200? I think
it was like 150 something.
Yeah, and he was good, and they were able to run for close to 300. I want to say, and Corral was great, but Calzada was just not good whatsoever. And Ole Miss won a different style that we're, I guess, waiting to see, to take them seriously. Like, this is how you go from fun, frisky 7-5, 8-4 to, oh, this team can go 10-2, 11-1 with the right year, right? Like, that's what you have to see, is them being able to win these kinds of games.
Without a doubt. And I think one thing you kind of referenced it when talking about Tennessee is, like, I feel like we have this perception of what Alabama is, because that's what they are every year. So we've used that as a benchmark, that you're like, A&M beat Alabama, they must be great, right? Florida almost beat Alabama, they must be like ready to compete for the SEC East again, you know? Tennessee played with Bama for 3 quarters. They're taking steps in the right direction, might be able to beat Georgia. You know, it's like we're using Bama as a benchmark every week, and maybe it's leading us the wrong way, you know? Like, maybe Bama's not as good as we thought. And, you know, also Zach Calzada had the luxury of playing Alabama in prime time, at home, a rowdy home atmosphere. Like, this was a different beast going on the road in Oxford, and Ole Miss brought it. Like, the defense they were incredible in this game.
Mm. Well, happy trails, Texas A&M, my Texas A&M Aggies, out of there.
Take them out of the two spot now.
They are out of the two spot.
Ole Miss, in the fourth quarter, when they were up 15-13, they had the interception that led to like a 15-yard touchdown drive. Then the pick six. Like, they were just making play. And they had the safety in the second quarter. Like, this, I was really impressed with Ole Miss's defense this week.
Michigan, Penn State. Do you know why Michigan could not wear the maize pants?
They did wear the maize pants.
Or not the maize. Wait, no, the yellow. They wore the yellow.
Yeah, the yellow is maize.
Is yellow maize? Which one's the other one? Which one's the blue one?
Blue is blue. I don't know. Blue?
Okay. Well, maybe it is.
They're maize and blue, right?
So, there you go.
Yeah, maize is like corn. Like,
oh, is that what
I was
it
not
is?
A fan. The uniform police here.
Mm.
The yellow socks, man. Like, it made everyone look like they're wearing, like, big, like, long tights or something. Like, I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit.
Really? I like this look. But anyway, they had to wear that look because Penn State wouldn't let them wear the blue.
Oh, they wanted to wear blue pants?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, shout out to Penn State, because that would have been some garbage watching Navy white Navy versus white Navy white.
Like, that would have been
awful.
Okay. Well, that was friend of the pod, Max Markovich on the Atlanta Sports Guys, who
I didn't realize that.
Tweeted that out. I want to pull up the exact one to get it right. But anyway, this
maybe
game.
That's why they rock the yellow socks.
Maybe.
Like, we'll make it as yellow as possible. You won't get us confused.
Exactly. But I want to pose this question to you, Matt Green. Is this the best Jim Harbaugh team he's ever had at Michigan?
Oh, I think it could be. I think a few weeks ago, I think we were questioning, you know, they kind of had that look of like an Iowa and Wisconsin. Like, yeah, the defense looks solid. You run the ball well, although they've run the ball way better than Iowa has all year. But we were questioning the passing attack. But I think you've seen the last few weeks, like, they're more balanced than I was giving them credit for before a few weeks ago. So I think they could give the Buckeyes a legitimate shot in a few weeks. Like, I'm becoming more and more of a believer in Michigan.
Really?
Especially because Penn State just has a way. I kind of said this on the pod. Like, they just have a way of, like, making you play their style. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, bringing you down in the trenches with them or something. You know, kind of. Maybe it's the long grass they have in Happy Valley. I don't know what it is. Like, teams just aren't really able to blow them out, even if they're a better team than them. You kind of saw that with Ohio State too. So Michigan or Penn State just gets you in those kind of grimy games, and Michigan be able to go on the road and beat Penn State, even if they're not ranked, they're what, 6-4 now.
Mm-hmm.
This is still a quality win, like a huge win for the program.
Yeah.
I mean, now, like, they had the Michigan State loss, but mm-hmm. now all they really have left is Ohio State. So, mm-hmm. and then the Big Ten championship. So, I mean, I'm not saying they're better than Ohio State, but I'm a lot higher on them now than I was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
For sure. I'm really excited about the big game now. I think it's actually going to be a lot closer and a lot. It's going to be interesting because it's going to remind me, I think, and this is something that speaks to your college football ethos, Matt Green, is I think it's going to be a better version of Ohio State Nebraska, where I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be heavy hitting, and I think it's not going to be as wonky as the Michigan State game, but I'm curious. I think it's going to be the best Michigan Ohio State game we've seen maybe in the Jim Harbaugh era, and I think we've seen that Ohio State
does for that. We haven't seen many good ones there.
Well, it's also like, do you want to guess how many losses Ryan Day has in the Big Ten at this point in his career?
Man, what is it, like one?
Zero. He's never lost a Big Ten game.
So they went undefeated. Oh, yeah, they lost to Oregon. I didn't even think about it. Yeah, so wow. Yeah. Even a couple few years back when Michigan was like top five and like, They were ranked higher than Ohio State all year. By the time that game came around, I think Ohio State ended up like hanging 60 on him that game, like when they had the block punt and everything. But yeah, we'll see. That's what it comes down to for Harbaugh. He's going to be measured by the Ohio State game.
But I think this is good, man. I think they bounced back. Good for him to bounce back. Haskins and their two-headed monster there, 31 carries, 156. I just think Clifford's not right. Like, that season ended when Clifford got hurt, 4.8 yards per attempt in this one. So rough ending down the stretch here for the Nittany Lions, but Michigan, I think, is top 10 program. I think Harbaugh deserves a lot of credit for flipping this program, and just, they're tough, man. I think Michigan's really good. OU Baylor, you called this one. We mentioned at the top, did Dave Aranda break the code to solving Lincoln Riley? And do you agree with Lincoln Riley that, Aranda crossed the line with the whole kicking the field goal as time expired there?
Well, 100% he did not cross the line. Mm. I was not aware of the tiebreaker aspect of it. So the fact that they lost to Oklahoma State by 10, mm-hmm. and now they have a win over Oklahoma by 13, like, that means something. I'm with Lincoln Riley on terms of, like, that's got to be like a 15-yard penalty or something. Like, there's still time and the whole crowd is on the field. Like, mm-hmm. that's got to be something. But you can't be mad about that field goal. Like, that could be huge in terms of, you know, making the Big 12 championship. So you can't hate on Baylor for that at all.
Okay. That's okay. So is Oklahoma, are we sure they're eliminated from the college football playoff? Because I am going to put them on the outside looking in, but I still don't think it's out of the question yet.
I wouldn't eliminate them all the way. Mm-hmm. I think Baylor's going to be, because Baylor's got two losses, right?
Yes.
Baylor's going to be the toughest one to get in. But Oklahoma and Oklahoma State both still have one loss.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely still possible. It's just going to take some chaos. Like,
I don't think it will, because can't you just do Cincinnati going down to Houston, and then you just have Oregon going down to Utah, and then they're back in? Right? If they went out?
Yeah, they could. I mean, you could honestly potentially get a second Big Ten team in, depending on what happens. But yeah, I guess if Oregon, but see, that's the madness it's going to take, right? Like,
I don't think that's Oregon, madness.
But who'd you say is going to beat Cincinnati?
Like, Houston's good, man. Houston is good.
It's possible, but Cincinnati is not likely to lose. They're better.
Well, I'm saying the AAC title game is open for business. I don't think Cincinnati's a guarantee to win the AAC title game right now, based on the way they played the last few weeks.
But right now, like, in all honesty, if Oregon loses,
mm-hmm.
Cincinnati loses, Georgia, like, I think a two-loss Alabama is almost more likely to be in there than Oklahoma or Oklahoma State.
Hmm.
I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want that, especially because Alabama, having lost to A&M and Georgia, like, who would be their good wins at that point also? It's not like a typical resume where they have multiple top 10, 15 SEC wins.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't want that to happen, but we've seen this committee, like, give the benefit to the eye test at times. So I don't know. That would be a doomsday scenario. Like, the committee wouldn't know what the hell to do. I would almost eliminate the Big 12 at this point, but yeah, not 100%.
Okay. Mississippi State comes back. I was watching this game at the tailgate on Saturday, and I thought it was over. And Mississippi State wins the second half 33-6 as they take out Auburn. Will Rogers, man, I think he's officially, dude, 6 TDs, no picks, crazy completion percentage. The air raid, just too much for Derek Mason and that Auburn defense. Pretty bonkers second half, but kudos to the Bulldogs for a monstrous never quit attitude and just taking care of business in the Plains.
Without a doubt, 40 unanswered points from the second quarter on, from like this, like late second quarter to like mid fourth quarter. Just insane. After Auburn went up 28-3, here are their drives for the rest of the game. It was missed field goal, punt, missed field goal, punt, turnover on downs, touchdown, fumble. So that's, if you want to draw up how you lose a game where you're up 28-3, that's it pretty much.
Man, but hey, good for them. I am so ready for the Egg Bowl, man. The Egg Bowl is going to be so much fun.
Oh, man, without a doubt.
Did you see who Kiffin said is the best? I think he said something like the best offense and best offensive mind in college football is Mike Leach. I think that's what he said yesterday.
He did, yeah.
Shout out to him. Just constantly trolling. I think he picked Georgia and, yeah, just what.
That was weird, right? Why was Lane Kiffin the celebrity picker? Like, I didn't hate it. Like, a head coach being the picker every week would honestly be kind of cool. Like, they have some insight
mm-hmm.
that country music stars and comedians don't have, so I'd be all about the head coach of whatever home team being the picker every week. I just thought it was kind of funny.
For
he
sure.
He also got the Georgia-Tennessee game horribly wrong.
Mm. we don't have to do that. Well, let's revisit the Georgia-Tennessee game. You watched it on the telly, as they say across the pond. In England, they say the telly, not the television. People forget. And I was there. It was fun atmosphere. It was great. Great first quarter. bad game from Hendon Hooker. He missed some stuff. His reads were bad. Miscommunications on that pick in the second quarter that really changed the game. I didn't like Heupel running up the clock there because I was like, they're getting the ball back after the touchdown where they went up 24-10. I'm like, this feels bad. I turned to a Tennessee fan behind me, and I was like, this feels like an avalanche is coming, and I don't think we're playing and prepared for it. I like the moves to go for it on fourth down. Like I said, not having Teyon Evans again was a brutal blow. Trevante Payton not being right was a brutal blow because there's a lot of Ramel Keaton in this one who has not been a factor all season. Yeah, I don't know. I think they fought hard. The quotes after were amazing, like with Heupel, who's just so likable and gave them all the credit in the world, and just talking about leaving points on the board and everything that he said, and they fought hard and how he's going to close the gap. And I don't know. I think it was a great showing. This team fought hard. Heupel just saying that we're not scared of Georgia and we weren't afraid to be on that field with them, and we took our shots. They obviously didn't connect. Tillman had a great game. But yeah, it's tough. It turns out playing the best team in the country with who's just stockpiled full of talent is hard, but it is fun. And Nealon was rocking, and we did what we could with the roster that we had. I did think it was interesting, Matt, that, like, I don't know if you like, you talk to more Georgia fans than I do, but like, they hated Stetson Bennett. Like, the Georgia fans around me, there was some terms that were thrown around whenever he would drop back and make a mistake that are not suitable for this podcast. But like, he is loathed, or I should say was loathed by the fans, Georgia fans rather. And I don't know, he's just so weird to me because Georgia is just so good everywhere. They're so good everywhere. I think they're kind of thin out wide. I don't think that was I thought that was kind of an area of weakness for them. They weren't really able to do anything with Bowers, with McConkie, Kiaris, like not a lot of stuff downfield that scared Tennessee. They didn't have any explosive plays for the most part outside of the James Cook run, and it was a lot of dink and dunk stuff, and just they were pretty even. I think they were at like 185 rushing and 185 passing or something close to that in the third quarter.
Okay, in the third, yeah, because Georgia ended up running for 274 on the ground.
So but I'm saying, like, going into the third, it was pretty even. Y'all were pretty pretty even keel on dividing things up. But and Tennessee obviously wasn't, and the six sacks, and just the offensive line really imploded in the second half because your defensive line's pretty stacked. Pretty stacked, but that was my takeaways. I thought Stetson wasn't very good. He's good at knowing when to run, and I think he's just a lot better when he's moving out of the pocket. He just looks kind of confused and flustered when he's has to sit there in the pocket, and you see it because there are open dudes that we can see, and he just doesn't find them. And I don't know, there are throws that like JT would hit. Like, that's the other thing that's got to be frustrating.
Because I think the fan base is definitely divided on Stetson Bennett for whatever reason. Like, why this guy is anything other than like a feel good story is kind of like blows your mind. Like,
I think it's just the pressure.
They just constantly hate on what he isn't and don't really acknowledge what he is. Like, JT Daniels, yeah, it would be nice to have JT Daniels, but he was also not healthy for 5-6 weeks in a row, and Stetson Bennett was, you know? Like, there, I think I heard someone else say this. It may have been Graham Coffey. Say there's 1 to 2 throws a game that you see, and you're like, JT Daniels makes that throw that Stetson Bennett doesn't. But there's also 4 to 5 plays with his legs a game that Stetson Bennett makes that JT Daniels doesn't. So it's like those balance each other out. When Stetson Bennett can take off and get a first down, like, people act like, oh, well, he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not really a running threat. Like, he's as much of a running threat as you truly need. And he's super efficient. Like, yeah, he didn't necessarily scare Tennessee a lot down the field, but he went 17 for 29, like 213 yards. Like, it's weird to me any Georgia fans that aren't satisfied with what Stetson Bennett is doing, right? Like, if you honestly just before the season, you said, hey, after 10 games, JT Daniels is going to be completing 65% of his passes with 15 touchdowns and 4 picks, and Georgia is 10-0, people would be like, yeah, I'll take that all day. Averaging 10 yard, almost 11 yards per attempt too. So he's not just dinking and dunking. We actually are having explosive plays in the passing game. Like, you would take it all day. but it's because it's Stetson Bennett and he's 5'10 and he looks the way he does. It's like people just want to think it's not legit. It's like, yeah, we know four and five star players can get better year to year, but so can the two stars. Like, Stetson Bennett is clearly a way better player than he was in 2020. And for all the talk about Tennessee's offense, like, this Georgia offense has been more productive all season. You know, like, they came in averaging more points per game than Tennessee did. And you saw James Cook, I think this is probably the best game of James Cook's career. 100 yards on the ground, 40-something yards receiving, three total touchdowns. Like, Tennessee really didn't have an answer for him. But as much as maybe, like you say, Stetson Bennett didn't scare Tennessee in the passing game, he also, I mean, he had success with the throws he made. So I think the one throw to Brock Bowers, I think, is a touchdown, you know, up the sideline that he – Bowers, I personally thought that was a catch on the sideline that he bobbled. But yeah, if Bennett just hits him in stride, like, that's a 60, 70-yard touchdown there. But, yeah, I mean, I think Georgia's offense is – like, this is just what they've done to everybody. Like, I think at the start of the week when someone asked me what I thought the score of this game was going to be, I said, well, it'll probably go how every Georgia game does. They'll probably score 35 to 45 points, and the opponent will probably have somewhere between 0 and 13. Well, Tennessee had 17, so you got to give them love for the most points anyone scored on Georgia this year. But, yeah, I think this is just kind of what Georgia does. Their running game isn't as dominant as it's been, you know, in years past with the DeAndre Swifts and the Chubb and Michelles, but – once this team gets up in the second half and they kind of run to put the game away, like, they definitely have the ability to do that. I feel like Zamir White was basically getting nothing in this game, but James Cook seemed to get 8 yards on every single carry. So I thought this offense, they definitely went about as what I expected, you know, because we knew Tennessee was going to give Georgia a look and they were going to have some success offensively. But I didn't feel like with what Tennessee did defensively, they could really give Georgia any problems offensively. But I got a couple of stats for you on this Georgia defense.
Oh, we don't have to do that.
So Tennessee came in averaging 38.2 points per game, and Georgia held them to 17. Georgia is so far this year is averaging holding to opponents to 23 points per game less than their season average. They're also holding teams to 2.2 yards per play less than their season average. So I was crunching some numbers, right? Georgia's faced one opponent this year that's in the top 30 in the country in points per play, or in yards per play, I should say. Like, I think that's kind of a narrative that's out there. Like, you know, how many good offenses have they really played? And Tennessee was looked at as probably the biggest test offensively. So they've only played one opponent, and Tennessee was not one. And Tennessee was 32nd in yards per play. Florida, I think, is top 10, top 15. So they played one opponent that's top 30 in yards per play. If those teams had not played Georgia, 7 of the 10 teams Georgia has played would be top 20 in the country in yards per play. That is just what Georgia's doing, and that's what I feel like people don't understand when they look at these season averages from some of these teams. Like, yeah, one of their 9 data points, one of their 8 data points is a game versus Georgia where they scored 0 and had 150 yards. You know, I think it's – this team is dominating so much, you're questioning how good the opponent is. And so now that you've seen an offense that truly – I think everyone respects how explosive Tennessee's offense is, I think people might understand a little bit more how dominant this Georgia defense.
Yeah. And it's just kind of overwhelming when you get sucked in there, when you're just like, there's nothing else you can really do here. This is not fun. Matt Green, I ran the numbers, and it's less fun when Tennessee does not have explosive plays.
Yeah, I tried to warn you, man. I know these Tennessee games have been fun this year, but unfortunately you had to sit through a boring Georgia one.
It wasn't boring. It was fun. It was cold, no, though. Sure. It was really, really cold. Like, that fourth quarter, man, I was not doing well. The Sports Renaissance woman and I were struggling. We were on the struggle bus with that. And as you know, I'm not really the beefiest guy. Not a beefy guy, Matt Green. Like, pretty skinny. So not a lot of meat to keep me warm. But alas, I made it out. I made it out. But it is kind of sad, man. Like, that's it. That's the last big game for Tennessee's season. We got South Alabama and Vanderbilt left. So we'll finish up. I mean, we should finish up 7-5 here. And I think that's a win for year one of Heupel. Like Graham and I talked about on Twitter, it's just, I think the scheme's there, the buy-in's there, but it's going to come down to the recruiting, or he's going to run into the same wall that Mullen did. Like, this is, like, that's the ultimate thing here, is this
the
is going to be...
The only thing with that is, I think Mullen is just an anomaly. I know we don't like Dan Mullen on this podcast, but not even, like, just hating him. It's just, like, people just don't like him. And it's hard to ever recruit that way. I feel like you see every single big time coach or big time job that gets a new head coach, they get an uptick in recruiting. I expect the same thing to happen with Tennessee and Heupel. Especially, you can see the product on the field is exciting to watch. Like, you have to be kind of a dick, you know, for people to not, you know, to not sign on board with that. Like, you saw Butch Jones, like, brick by brick, that was their whole thing, right? Like, even when he took over at Tennessee, like, that first full recruiting class he had, it was, like, top five in the country. Like, Dan Mullen is just – like, you saw Harbaugh at Michigan do that, you know? Like, Dan Mullen is just one of the only coaches that just never got that spike in recruiting, and he's in the most fertile recruiting land in the country. So I definitely am a believer that Heupel, especially what we've seen in the SEC East this year with what Florida's doing – It seems reasonable to think Tennessee will be the second best team in the East next year.
Yeah. I was actually just talking about that with my parents tonight when I was grocery shopping. I think if you had told any Tennessee fan before the year that, like, this would end with Tennessee being the second best program in the SEC East right now, you take it every time.
It's at least on the second... like, you'd put the second-ranked trajectory, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Florida might be – like, they obviously beat Tennessee this year. They might still be a little better. But, man, just no one wants to be a part of Florida right now.
I'm just saying, but, like, if you play Florida-Tennessee now, how does that game go?
Probably – who knows? Florida-Samford wasn't on the pod – on the pick-em, by the way. But, well, I feel like we have to talk about that game. Like,
I didn't watch any of it because I was at Tennessee for that. So I didn't see – I just got the text and everyone losing their minds. And everyone – let me just say, Tennessee fans very much enjoy the Florida fall. Like, we may struggle to beat them every year, but you know what? When it falls apart like this and we saw the stories – like. It was wild because I think Tennessee hadn't kicked off yet. And it was like, wait, what is the score now?
Yeah. I was working at a Mellow Mushroom as an 18-year-old when Ole Miss upset Florida with Tim Tebow's, what was that, junior year? And you would have thought it was in Athens, I should say. And you would have thought Georgia was playing with how nuts that Mellow Mushroom place is going for Florida to lose. But yeah, all you need to know about the game, Florida-Samford game this weekend, is that Emory Jones set the school record with total yards, 464 passing yards, 86 rushing yards, seven total touchdowns. So they scored 70 points. That's all you need to know. The offense was clicking. Emory Jones is playing well. Dan Mullen, you know, just dialing up that offense. That's all you need to know. There's nothing else significant that happened in that game. Oh, yeah. Also, Samford was up 42-35 at halftime.
But as of this recording, Mullen still has a job, correct?
I mean, not past 2021, honestly.
Like, so you think he's out?
I feel like there's no chance. Like, we've talked about for weeks, like, on paper, he shouldn't be fired right now. Like, he's done enough in his first 3 years there. Now year four, like, having your first bad season. He's done enough to keep the job, but it's the intangible feeling, like, just giving up 50 points, almost 600 yards. I guess not almost 600 yards, but over 500 total yards to Samford. Like, to be losing at the half to Samford, like, how, especially when you're fighting for your job, like, this, you're not sleepwalking on Sam. It's one thing to be losing to Samford, like, a couple weeks before you're going to the SEC championship and you're looking ahead, whatever, you came out and sleepwalked. That's still not good, but you can't sleepwalk in this situation. Things are bad and you need a win desperately. And you come out and play like this. Just the lack of effort. I don't know. Like, the, I always question when I see those anonymous stories, you know, anonymous coaching quotes, like that always come out before the preseason. But Bruce Feldman is a legit like journalist. So for him to post anonymous quotes, I feel like I trust that those are real and those are legitimate. And it seems spot on with what you've seen out of the Florida team and just the lack of effort the last few weeks.
Mm. We'll
but
see
I
how
it I don't see any respectable like defensive coordinator like wanting to sign on to be Dan Mullen, like a coach who's a dead man walking. You know, I think it's just going to be – there's just so much negativity around the program. I don't know. It seems tough to go through another year of this kind of dark cloud hanging over you, especially how much better are they going to be next year? Like, it's Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones. Like, what are we really expecting this team to really be in 2022? Like, I don't know.
Gary Patterson, Florida Gator, D.C.?
No chance. Honestly, you know who would be the perfect Florida coach, but he won't do it? Is Lane Kiffin.
Oh.
Like, just the swagger that Dan Mullen tried to have, like, that's the Steve Spurrier.
I was going
to
say, Lane Kiffin's the modern Spurrier.
Lane Kiffin's got that.
Yeah.
It's not phony. It's not trying too hard. Like, man, I would hate Lane Kiffin so much if he was at Florida. Like, that guy, he's arrogant, but... It's like with Steve Spurrier was arrogant back in the day, but it's like you also couldn't disagree with the things he was saying. It's like, yeah, he's right, though. You just don't like to hear it. Like Dan Mullen, it's, you know, what's the expression? That they're pissing on you and telling you it's raining. Like every week, like even this week, the reporter asking tough questions. He's like, is it disappointing to lose? It's never disappointing to lose. It's like, you know what we mean, man. You gave up 50 points to Samford. Like, this wasn't a good game. You have to know that. Please tell me that you know that. It's important to me that you know that.
Oh, I agree. This is the bad luck. It feels like this thing's going to end. But I kind of don't want it to. I think you and I, as Tennessee and Georgia fans, want Mullen back. Like, I'm rooting against his firing because I think Florida could get better, and I think Florida does a good job. So I hope.
That's all you need to know, right? A Georgia fan, a Tennessee fan would prefer Florida keep the coach they have, right? That tells you everything.
Exactly. UCF, SMU, speaking of coaches of the SEC past, Gus Malzahn loses again here. Mikey Keene, 18 for 35, 174, 5 yards per attempt, 20.9 QBR. Quarterbacks, if you're considering, you're like, hey, Orlando, the weather's good, Gus Malzahn, you're going to want to not choose the Gus Malzahn option. You're going to want to stay clear of Central Florida. You're going to want to go to Knoxville, Tennessee. you're going to want to move on. So Dylan Gabriel, come on down. Excited for you to hit the portal next year and become a volunteer. Get in the mix there with Hendon Hooker, Taven Jackson and company. But yeah, SMU right the ship, dropped 55 on the Knights. Any thoughts on this one?
I mean, they just went off.
Mm.
First win over UCF since joining the AAC, and yeah, they did it with a bang. Over 600 yards of total offense. Like, Tanner Mordecai was cutting this team up.
Yeah,
SMU, quality team. So are they? They could be in the AAC championship, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's either them or Houston?
Yes.
Okay. Have we seen that game?
Wait, which one? SMU Houston?
Yeah.
Yeah, Houston won.
Okay. Oh, so that's that's next week. Oh, okay. Cincinnati SMU's this week. So that could be a game for sure.
And then you get Houston Cincy in the championship. That's what I'm saying. Cincinnati is not guaranteed anymore. Like, I just...
That's fair.
I don't know. Minnesota, Iowa, sir. What did you make of this one?
Oh, man. Well, I don't want to toot my own horn about the on-point prediction I had with this game.
Wait, speaking of, we didn't reveal our pick-em. We didn't do it at the top.
We didn't go through the standings. You want me to go through the standings real quick?
I don't
want... On this one, this is a 5.5-point... Or this is a 6-point spread. And Minnesota got only lost by 5. Did they cover? What do you call that? They weren't the underdog. I don't know. I won the pick. I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know the gambling term for that when you're the underdog. But yeah.
So no, you still cover if it's like the home team's favored by 7 and you lose by four. The road team still
is that,
covered.
Is that the terminology? Minnesota was 6-point underdog, lost by five.
Yeah, so they covered.
They covered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, but Iowa got the win. This game pretty much went a lot like I thought. Like Iowa seems better than the scoreline of like kind of every game they play. Like it's almost just feels like you guys should be dominating this game, but you don't score enough points. You know, it's kind of that, it gives you that feeling.
It's also just like, I feel like every box score, if you went through every year with the Iowa Hawkeyes, every quarter, it's like 3 points, 7 points, seven, six, and then they scored 27. And they won 27-20. Like, that is every Iowa game ever. Alex Padilla was not much better than Spencer Petras. Like, 11 for 24, 206, 2 TDs. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Minnesota's still going bowling, 6-4, 8-2 Iowa. Like, if they finish 9-3, 10-2, still a great year for the Hawkeyes. Just not as good as that number two early season ranking turned out to be.
They're cool with it. And that's why Kirk Ferentz is just... I don't know. Does he get a statue? Is Kirk Ferentz statue level?
Well, as we've seen with the TCU situation, let's go ahead and wait till they're gone before we construct any statues, before it gets awkward.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. But it's like they're fine with him. It's like he's not good. He's not really like great, but you know,
I would say he's great.
Years,
he qualifies as great.
He's The College Football Hall of Fame qualifications for coaches are generous, I would say. And I feel like he's a very good coach. And he's like a easy Hall of Famer. But like how many times have they truly contended? And what, he's been there like, what, 20 years? 23 years?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had a year with Brad Banks back in like 2002, you know? Like, there's a couple years ago, I think they went undefeated. And lost, was it when they lost Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship, or maybe Michigan State? They were like top 10, top 5, I think, week of the Big Ten Championship. It's like in 23 years, they've got, you know, 5-6 top 10 finishes. It's like they're cool with that. It's like he's really good, but Iowa has a ceiling, and I guess they're fine with, you know, this guy just continuing to be a solid team every year.
It's Iowa. You can't win a national title, Iowa. This is incredible for Iowa. I think the coach who follows him is going 6-6, 7-5. They're going to go in the Nebraska zone. Just don't take it for granted. Kirk Ferentz is great. He is a legendary coach, longest tenured college coach right now with one school. Now, Kirk Ferentz is a legendary coach. I think Iowa's
legendary, but where would you currently rank him among college head coaches, though?
Top 10.
See, I think we had our top 10 lists. Like, I don't think either one of us was putting Kirk Ferentz.
No, I had him in there.
And
you
might
have to go back to the tapes.
That The Athletic, they do their like top 25 coaches every year. Mm. And I think it's always a controversial thing of Iowa fans specifically, like arguing that Kirk Ferentz is a top 25 coach. And it's like, he's a good coach, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think a lot of
it is Iowa. I don't know. They've been solid. They're content with what they are.
The problem with Ferentz, though, and like coaches like that, where they stayed in the small, like I would have loved to have seen Gary Patterson at Georgia or at Florida. You know what I mean? Where like it's hard for me to really get a good feel of where they are as a coach, because we saw when Urban went from Utah to Florida. We saw what happened with Brian Kelly when he went from Cincinnati to Notre Dame.
Saban a couple good years in Michigan State, and he goes to LSU.
Right. Les Miles even at LSU from Oklahoma State. Like, we never saw Gundy leave. We never saw Pat Fitzgerald leave. So it's hard for me to put those, like, to figure out where to place them, because I don't know how they would actually match up where they're contending for national titles or in programs where they can realistically contend for national titles. They have the resources for that. So I don't know. Those coaches are harder for me to pick.
No, that's fair. He's definitely a good coach.
Yeah. I would like, what would he have done at USC? Kirk Ferentz at USC. Let's make it happen for 2 years. Or 4 years. One recruiting cycle. Let's see what happens.
If there was ever a coach, honestly, if you named every FBS coach, like ranked him in order of not taking the USC job, Kirk Ferentz seems somewhere near the top.
Absolutely. Miami, Florida State. We talked about this game not needing to happen this late in the season. Make it the opener again, folks. What are we doing here? But Florida State, dude, this is... What if Florida State goes bowling because of their win at the end of the season against Florida? They're 4-6 now. Miami falls to 5-5. Man, Tyler Van Dyke, not a great game. Florida State, I have no idea what to make of them, but I am so ready for the insanity that I think Florida State, Florida is going to be.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that's it's big for so many reasons, right? Like, for one, just getting Mike Norvell that positive momentum that he needed. Mm-hmm. Like, if you could get this team bowling by just winning the last three games versus nobodies, like, that's just positivity. You know, if we win our last three games to qualify for a bowl, you know, get those extra practices in December that every, like, young coach or coach of the young team wants, like, that all by itself is huge, especially when you're just – with what Florida State's been, with they start 0-4 this year. But to do it by beating Miami and potentially Florida, that would just be so massive and just kind of taking over. Like, the state of Florida is just for the taking right now in recruiting, which is why, like, obviously everyone in the country is going down to poach guys out of Florida. But those in-state schools are just – None of them want to be the most attractive site to recruits right now, right? So if Florida State can – they obviously got the huge win over Miami. I did not see this coming at all. And if they were also – like with what we saw over Samford, we might even favor Florida State to beat Florida. So I don't know. That game is going to be crazy. I'm afraid just because of the records it might get stuck at noon, but I'm hoping we can get a prime time slot for Florida State, Florida.
Because I think it's going to be dumb. It's going to be a really dumb game, and it's going to be weird. So I'm here for it, and I have a lot of
interest. Sure, because Georgia Tech, they'll stick that at noon. Like,
we don't even need to play that, do we?
Maybe you don't even bring a TV network to film that one. Who knows? But yeah, Florida State, and even South Carolina Clemson. Can South Carolina mess with Clemson this year?
I
don't know.
I hadn't considered that, but I think you're onto something there.
We'll see. Clemson's messed around with a lot of teams that aren't very good. So, like, I don't think South Carolina's very good, especially not after losing to Missouri. But we'll see.
How the mighty have fallen. We're considering that game not being a blowout. NC State, Wake Forest, Matt Green. The ACC's weird. Pitt comes back. They beat UNC late. That was a fun game on Thursday night, I want to say. But... yeah, I mean, this was about the kind of game we expected. What did you make of this one? Because this was a shootout, NC State ultimately falling short here. I had NC State winning this one. I thought they were the best team in the ACC. Man, 59 pass attempts for Devin Leary. Like, you get in these shootouts with the offense, and you never know who's coming out of that one, sir. Amika Amenzi for NC State, 10 receptions, 133 yards, 2 TDs. But... man, Wake Forest, guess who is still undefeated in the ACC? The Demon Deacons, 6-0, 9-1 in the season. Go Deeks, man. What a win.
Yeah, seriously. Wake Forest is great television. I'll tell you that right now. What are the chances Devin Leary's an NFL quarterback?
Pretty strong.
I feel like every NC State quarterback just develops into an NFL quarterback. It's crazy. Like, I feel like he made a lot of, like, big-time-looking throws on Saturday. I thought NC State was going to figure out a way to come back in this one. Like, almost the best onside kick I've ever seen. Yeah, that thing went, like, 9 yards and, like, 2 feet before before the guy on the kick team picked it up. But... This was a great game, big time win for Wake Forest. This almost solidifies the ACC Atlantic for them. They can clinch it next week versus Clemson, but even if they don't, they have at Boston College where they can clinch it the week after. So I don't know. I think early on, I think Clemson might be favored over Wake Forest on the road, believe it or not. But it'll be interesting. Wake Forest might be in the ACC Championship.
Okay, we'll see.
Pitt can clinch too next week.
Pitt Wake Virginia. Forest would be so much fun.
I mean, those have been the best two teams in the ACC this year.
We all had that before the year too. Pitt Wake Forest,
of course, without a doubt. If Wake Forest fell apart and lost to Clemson and Boston College to end the year, and we somehow got you know, Clemson in Miami or Clemson in Virginia or something. I feel like it would be such a crime. But Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, if they both can run the table for Charlotte, I think both of those teams could be top. I mean, Wake Forest could be in the top 10 by that time.
Hmm. I think they're a top 10 team. I think at this point, I don't know how you don't include them. I don't think they're a top 4 team, but I do think they're somewhere in that top 10. Indy, Virginia was on primetime, and I watched as much as I could, and then I like moved out. Like, I don't think I should lose points for this one, Matt, because I based it all on Brandon Armstrong, and he was out for this one. So they started a true freshman, and Jay Wolfolk went 18-33, 196, two interceptions, and Notre Dame dominated. So it's a huge shame that we did not get to see Armstrong versus this Notre Dame group. But Notre Dame, we haven't really talked about, and they're just on the periphery. Are they? Should we start talking to our children about an 11-1 Notre Dame getting a fourth playoff spot again?
Oh, man, I hope not. There's a chance, right? Like, we all know this team isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, like, Notre Dame's schedule, as much smack as people want to talk, especially in SEC country, about Notre Dame's schedule every year, like, it's a national schedule, and it usually has a bunch of pretty quality opponents on it. But this year, it's just, for whatever reason, it seems like their entire schedule is basically down, other than that Cincinnati game, and they lost that one. So they've looked bad, not bad, but they haven't looked great in most of the games they played. This was honestly probably their most dominant win of the year, but like you said, without Brennan Armstrong, like, what does that win really even mean? So what is the scenario for that to happen? Is that even possible?
Like, yes,
because Cincinnati has to get. Was this take Cincinnati losing?
Yeah, Cincinnati loses, and if you get a Cincinnati loss, Notre Dame wins out, and I think Ohio State probably has to lose one more.
Because Oregon,
yeah.
And Ohio State, the Big Ten. That's a doomsday scenario where the Big Ten could kind of cannibalize itself.
Hmm.
If Michigan State is able to beat Ohio State next week, I think that's the doomsday scenario, because then Ohio State's going to go and beat Michigan. Then Michigan State would still be the only one with two losses, but I don't know. Then they could end up losing to Wisconsin or something. Like, that's the scenario it's going to take, I think, for the Big Ten to get left out. I think it would take something crazy, and Oregon losing, for Notre Dame to be able to get in there. Like, I'm taking a two-loss Alabama over one-loss Notre Dame all
But the playoff committee's not doing that, is what I'm saying. Like,
you don't
I
think so?
No. They love Notre Dame. Notre Dame's great for ratings.
It is hilarious every time you hear, well, we had meetings with all the conference commissioners and Notre Dame. Like, they play by different rules. So, yeah, I guess from that perspective, I can't rule them out.
I think there's I would say a greater than 40% chance they get a fourth playoff spot.
No, I wouldn't.
Wisconsin, they beat 41-13. Guess who's rolling right now? The Wisconsin Badgers.
No, that's fair, but that's the best win, right?
Yeah. Purdue, the Kingslayers, the Purdue Boilermakers.
The Spoilermakers,
yeah.
Nickname this weekend.
But they're going through. We know the thing about Notre Dame is, like, they're not an uncertainty like the rest of them, right? Like, Oklahoma's an uncertainty, Ohio State's an uncertainty, Oregon's certainly an uncertainty, Cincinnati's an uncertainty. Guess who we know is finishing 11-1 with Georgia Tech and Stanford remaining on the calendar? Notre Dame's finishing 11-1 without a conference championship game to also potentially give them another blemish, and they're what, seventh in the AP poll right now?
Yeah, I think, were they 7 or 8? Were they 9 in the most recent playoff?
Yeah, they're just sitting waiting for their moment. Like, they're going to, like, Oklahoma will fall back behind them, right? Who's in front of them right now in the CFP playoff?
Yeah, so Oklahoma, I mean, that in terms of the playoff rankings, that'll move up to 8 right there.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, and Ohio State are all.
They're going to cannibalize themselves a little bit.
I mean, it is possible for them, for only one of those teams to be ahead of them by the end of it, especially mm-hmm. if Ohio State just runs through Michigan State and Michigan, kind of people think they will.
Mm.
I mean, that moves Notre Dame up to 6. Maybe if Cincinnati could lose, they get into 5. Alabama loses to Georgia, get into 4. Yeah, it's possible. Oregon loses. Now that you say it, you're so mad. I definitely can't rule out Notre Dame. But a Big 12 champion, I think still, because they'll have those two big wins at the end of the year, regardless of who it is. Well, unless it's Baylor. If Baylor's a two-loss, Big Ten champion that could change things. But yeah, I guess we can't rule out Notre Dame. I do not want to see Notre Dame in the playoff. Although, as a Georgia fan, I would not mind seeing Notre Dame in the playoff because I do not think they're a top four team.
Okay. Well, let's run through the remaining games and get to our stickers. Matt Green, Alabama 59, New Mexico State 3, Oregon 38, Washington State 24. Ohio State drops 59 on the spoiler maker. So it's over. The spoiler maker situation is over. Ohio State's just...
I got a stat for you for Ohio State in this game.
I'm ready.
They had 11 drives in this game. 8 touchdowns, 1 field goal, 1 punt, and then 1 to end the game, which honestly, that was like second and goal, I think, when the game ended. They could have scored again if they wanted to. They had 624 yards out of a possible 697 yards. Like, this, they could not have moved the ball basically any more than they did. Even the field goal they took, I think, was they got down to like the 13-yard line or inside the 10 or something. Like, they absolutely moved the ball at will on this Purdue defense. And is Chris Olave their third best receiver?
Like, no, he's the best. It goes one Olave, two Wilson.
Thought he was the best receiver in college football, and he might be the third best receiver on this team. Like, this, they're so loaded.
Yeah. Michigan State 40, who wore some awful uniforms in this one. Michigan State 40, Maryland 21. That yellow goal, whatever that is, with their green. What are you doing? Michigan State, your uniforms are good. What is that? Why are they with the state draped across the front? It did not look good. Did you see those?
Terrible. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. It's awful. Who do you think you are, Baylor? You can't just change your school colors, all right? You can't do it. Baylor somehow managed to do it. I don't know how it worked, but they pulled it off. But Michigan State, you got that green too. It's pretty green. As a green, I am an expert on the color green. Mm-hmm. And Michigan State green is the pinnacle of all greens. It's perfect color.
Wisconsin 35, Northwestern 7. Wisconsin, man, Braylon Allen, true freshman, he enrolled early, 25 carries, 173, 3 TDs. He's the next guy. Just as a heads up, folks. If you were wondering if Wisconsin was down and out, no, Wisconsin's back to being a top 10 program, and they're cruising. And Graham Mertz, 18, 23, 216, 2 TDs. They figured it all out. They're going to be a pain in the butt. And yeah, Wisconsin's fine. Nevada 21, San Diego State 23, ends on a final drive here. Nevada can't get down there to get in the field goal range. Unfortunate. Carson Strong, 350 yards, 3 TDs. He'll be playing on Sundays, but
this game cost me my pick'em this week. And I have explained to you the pick'em I do with my friends, and
that translates to this pod.
My,
yeah,
this was my 9-pointer, and this was a 2.5-point spread. And San Diego State won by 2. If they won by 3, I would have been the winner in the pick'em this week. So it was unfortunate.
LSU's got a quarterback, sir. Garrett Nussmeier looks like he could be the guy long term in Death Valley. But Arkansas steals one, moves to 7-3. They win on a last second field goal. Did you see the clock issues late in this one?
I did not.
Yeah, there was some weird clock issues with runoff and stuff like that. It was weird. Not a great weekend for SEC officials. Clemson,
a great season for SEC officials, but Arkansas, that, and we talked about that. Like, they had to win. They had to win that game. Their first win over LSU since 2015. Did you happen to see the social media post Arkansas's football account put out?
I did not.
Oh, man. Are you familiar with Reno 911?
Yes. I did the new boot goofing.
Lieutenant Dangle, yes. The new boot goofing. Mm-hmm. They had, like, photoshopped the golden boot on top of Dangle's boots. And he's doing the whole new boot goofing thing. It was big time. It was way better than the South Carolina, Florida troll job. Like, I respected the South Carolina one. It just went on for too long. But this was short and sweet. And a great reference to Reno 911, super underrated show.
I love Reno 911. I was actually doing a new boot goofing bit with my new Merrell boots on Saturday. The Sports Renaissance one loves it. So I was actually doing it, doing the skip and everything.
That's a classic.
Great show. Great show. It's a great show to fall asleep to in my early 20s. Like, I always had that on in the background. That was a classic one, too. And just Terry is an all-time character. Miss Terry. Now you have me wanting to watch that to fall asleep tonight. Thank you, Matt Green. So the last thing...
And you're welcome.
Mm-hmm, the last thing, and we'll wrap up tonight and then hit the stickers real quick. But we have to save... I wanted to save this for the main event. You know where I'm going. We're going to Austin. They supposed to be SEC, man. Sir. They supposed to be SEC. Texas falls to 4-6. The Kansas Jayhawks, 57. The Longhorns, 56. Get their first Big 12 win of the year. Oh, my goodness, Matt Green.
I think this snapped, what was it, a 56-game road conference losing streak for Kansas. Like, man, unbelievable. I think I saw a stat. Oh, man, I see if I can find the exact number. It was like the last 5 years or something. They're 2-3 versus Texas and like 2-43 versus the rest of the Big 12 combined or so. Yeah, that's the number. 2-43 versus the rest of the Big 12 combined. Like, man, that's just rock bottom. Rock chalk bottom, if you will. That was some clever wordplay right there. You can't even hate on that. But Texas, I know your buddy was talking about, is Texas back after, what was that, 1 week, 2 weeks this season? Like, it's year one. They're definitely not back. Maybe they'll start moving in the right direction. I don't want to overreact to things that happened in year one. I think Kirby even lost to Vanderbilt at Georgia year one. So year one is kind of just the year. Saban lost, I think, to, what, it was UL Monroe, UL yeah. Lafayette, one of those two. Year one. So these kind of things happen, but it is awesome that it comes on the news of them joining the SEC, because the memes have just been fantastic over the last 24 hours. Just, I know you've seen the one with the guy behind the tree that's like, you know, rubbing his hands together. Like, I've seen that, like, Vanderbilt waiting on Texas to join the SEC, things like that.
I think
that.
I sent that to you.
You sent that to me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now that's where I saw it. So yeah, it's just excellent stuff.
Man, they're in trouble. I wish there weren't going to be pods, because I would love to have Texas in the East. That would just be a delight. The reality that they're... I think Oklahoma, we've talked about this ad nauseum in this podcast. I think Oklahoma will be fine in the SEC. I don't know about Texas.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, yeah, that's all I can say. I don't know what to make of it, but they're going to be playing a much tougher schedule than they're playing right now.
All right. Well, let's wrap up with our stickers.
They haven't made a bowl. They might not make a bowl game, right?
Yeah, they're 4-6. They have to win out.
4-6.
Who do they have left?
Let me see. They got at West Virginia.
Oh no.
So that's an L right there. You don't just go into Morgantown and get a dub. So at West Virginia and Kansas State to close out.
Oh yeah, they're not winning both of those. Yeah, no, they're not going bowling.
Yeah, that's after the 4-1 start, and especially not even after the 4-1 start. After the 4-1 3/4 start, because of how they started that Oklahoma game. And it's like, ever since that collapse against Oklahoma, like, that was the first of 5 straight losses. Like, I don't know. At that point, like, they're close losses, you know? Like, I know we're giving Scott Frost some hype for close losses, so I don't want to discredit him. But it's interesting how that kind of, I don't know, the hangover of that Oklahoma collapse is just kind of hung over 4 straight weeks in a row.
Absolutely. All right, Matt Green. Well, let's hit our stickers real quick, and we'll wrap up this edition of the pod. My stickers. Kirby's adjustments after the first quarter. Shout out to Kirby for those. Got to give credit where credit is due, because I am not a Sauer fan. Not a Sauer fan on this podcast.
I respect
Matt Green.
That.
Yeah.
Even though everyone would assure you that he can only recruit and he's a terrible game coach. It's good to see him adjust. It's good to see you give him some love.
Yeah, he was great. He was great in this one. Dave Aranda, great win here. He's, I think Baylor, we have to like pencil in as like the future of the Big 12, right? Like, I think they're the sitting power for me. If I had to bet on who runs the Big 12 post Texas and OU, I would say the number one pick for me would be Baylor at the moment. Dave Aranda's doing some great stuff there.
That's an interesting call. I could see that. Or one of the newcomers, Cincinnati, BYU.
Maybe. I just like where Baylor's going. Oklahoma and
State.
I like.
I'd probably get Oklahoma State, Baylor seem like they're on another level from the rest of the remaining teams in the Big 12.
I would agree. Samford, shout out to the Samford Bulldogs. Given Dan Mullen and the Gators, hell of a fight this weekend. Shout out to them. And Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach for putting in the work in different ways and ensuring that the Egg Bowl this year is just going to be an absolute... I love the Egg Bowl. I don't know if you can tell. It's one of my favorite rivalry games. So I'm excited for that. And then you have one, a different guy here.
Yeah, I have the one I threw in there. You got to throw in Jonathan Garibay, mm-hmm. if I'm saying that name correctly. Texas Tech, 62-yarder to win the game this weekend. Like... That's NFL type stuff. You don't see college kickers hitting 60 yarders to win games. So some Kevin Butler type stuff, I should say.
Butler type stuff. You were not alive for Kevin Butler type stuff, sir.
I was not, but that was like a 60, I think it was 61 yarder or so to beat Clemson back in like, what, 83-ish? I don't know, some early 80s before my time. But still a legendary kick in Georgia sports lore. But that's what that Texas Tech kick was this weekend. I feel like that was a big win for the Red Raiders.
There you go. The stickers that we had to remove, Dan Mullen, who we talked about ad nauseum, bad weekend there. Cincy, there's just, I know they won, but USF's really bad. Jeff Scott has not gotten there yet, and it just still just doesn't. You got to be doing more style points, guys. You got to be doing more. And then Steve Sarkisian, man, rough last few weeks for Sark in Austin. Did you have any other ones you'd like to throw out there?
I also got to just throw out something for these Tennessee uniforms.
Oh, no.
What is the white helmets with these black uniforms?
We've talked about this. It wasn't their call.
Supply issue.
Yes.
I've heard, but just don't wear them yet then. I don't know. Bring back the smoky grays. Tennessee doesn't need rockin' black, especially if it's going to throw off your perception of how many Tennessee fans are actually in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, Tennessee's above this. It's not like it's a gimmick to rock a black jersey, or to rock an alternate jersey, but I don't know. I feel like Tennessee, they shouldn't do it every big game. Like, I feel like that's the kind of what they fell into with the gray uniforms. Like, it was like Florida next year, we rock the gray. Georgia's at home next year, we rock the gray. You know, they did it every year. Like, Tennessee's got some classic, good-looking uniforms. You want to see some big-time stages where they rock those. So I was just disappointed with the uniforms, but, you know, I'm a uniform guy. So no hate to Tennessee. I feel like if they had the black helmet, I feel like it would be a sick alternate. But those are my two cents on the uniforms. I'm removing a helmet sticker from the equipment team at Knoxville.
I'll allow it. But hey, I think it's coming. I think what's going to happen is
bring back the smoke grays.
What I think is going to happen is I think you just get smoke grays and black. I think it's just going to be a lot more variations for Tennessee football. But I think it's going to be the all black, the all smoky grays. I think those are coming. But
I just don't think Tennessee needs all that. So from Adidas to Nike, their jerseys, their regular jerseys just look so much better. Like they just look, I don't know, they look classy.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying what reality and what players want. I think there's a disconnect. And players love the black uniforms, so.
Like, I would rather them change up and rock the orange pants more often. Mm. You know, rock the on the road or rock the all orange at home. Like, that's still Tennessee, you know. The black, like the smoky gray, because no one else is doing the gray, that was kind of Tennessee's thing, too. Like, if you're just rock black like everybody else, before you know it, you're Iowa State. You don't even know what your school colors are. That's I want to tread lightly.
Okay. All right. Matt Green, do you have anything else you'd like to add as we wrap up here this Sunday night?
That's all I got, sir. I want to give a shout out to you for being very classy in defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was. I know this weekend didn't go how you planned it, but, you know, here we are.
It was fun, man. And you know what? This is how I ended it with Graham on Twitter. It's just that, like, you know what's good for college football and just us in general in the South is Tennessee and Georgia both being up and trending in the right direction. That game having meaning and feeling intense and just both crowds being into it and both fan bases being passionate and excited about the direction of their program is fun. I like it. I like when both teams are good.
Without a doubt. And there's definitely something to it. It's like when Tennessee is good. Like when Tennessee first went downhill, South Carolina was there to be the third of the big three in the SEC East. So you never really noticed, you know, that there was still a lot of competition at the top of the East. But since South Carolina, since Spurrier's moved on, like, there hasn't been that clear third team in the East. And even, you know, Florida's gone through a couple coaches, so even they haven't been there every year. And even Georgia, obviously, they're not – they haven't won the SEC every single year. But Tennessee just being back in the SEC East, like, conversation, I feel like just makes the conference better. And that's always a good thing.
There you go. Matt Green, always a pleasure. I will talk to you very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.